DW Africa Link.
It's the start of another week, Monday the 29th of July. Welcome to the show that links you to all the news stories from Africa and beyond. This is Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I am Eddie Micah Jr.
And I am Assumpta Latos. You're welcome to join the debate on today's stories via our Facebook page, DW Africa. Coming up on the program, Nigerian Shi'ite sect condemns court move to label it a terrorist group. But what exactly is their argument?
We don't carry arms. How can somebody who come to a procession with his wife and children carry arms? He simply brought his wife and children to show to the world that we are peaceful. We do not come out to fight.
Also coming up, in 2 days, he will have spent 1 year in office as Zimbabwe's president. But is there anything to celebrate so far?
Prices of goods and services are rising time and again. Fuel prices keep going up. Maybe the change shall come. But as it stands now, the cost of living keeps getting tight.
Those stories in detail, plus more coming right up. But first, here's the news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Kaidan Bach with the DW News. The Nigerian government banned the Shiite Muslim group, the Islamic Movement of Nigeria. The group led several protests in the capital of Abuja last week, demanding their leader be released. Clashes between the group and police left at least 20 dead. Both sides accused the other of starting violence. Meanwhile, a Nigerian court adjourned a bail hearing for the leader of the group on Monday. A prominent Zimbabwean human rights activist has been arrested before showing a controversial film. Our correspondent, Privilege Mushaviri, has more.
Zimbabwean film and theater actor Dave Zguja and three others appeared in Harare court on Monday on charges of broadcasting a film without a censorship certificate. The film, titled The King of Kush, depicts the abduction of the Zimbabwean ambassador to Pakistan's child by a religious group. The state alleges that the film, which is still in production, would cause disharmony between Christians and Muslims. Critics say this is an attack on artistic and freedom of expression guaranteed under the Zimbabwean constitution. Defense lawyer Moses Nkomo says his clients have done nothing wrong.
It's quite sad when the criminal justice system is used to gauge people from expressing their views and commenting on things that are happening in society as a whole.
The UK has ruled out swapping seized oil tankers with Iran. Foreign Minister Dominic Raab said the UK wants Iran to play by the rules of the international legal system when it comes to the seized vessels spat.
We're making it very clear that we expect the international rules-based system, including navigation of the seas, to be respected. And we've seen a UK-flagged vessel detained unlawfully, and we expect the Iranians, if they want to come out of the cold and get more acceptance in the international community, then they've got to adhere to the rules. And you can't go around seizing vessels unlawfully. And we will insist on that and engage with them as constructively as we can to seek that end.
This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. A nighttime curfew was put in place for four towns in Sudan's North Kordofan state. The curfew comes after five protesters, including students, were shot dead at a rally. The state governor said the curfew is in place from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. every night and will last indefinitely. The lawyer and personal physician for Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny said he was poisoned while in prison. Navalny was taken to hospital on Sunday on what was described as an allergic reaction. He was brought back to prison on Monday, serving a sentence for calling an unauthorized rally. Monday was called Earth Overshoot Day, meaning humans have used up its natural allowance for water, soil, and clean air for all of 2019. The environmental group Global Footprint Network says humanity is using natural resources at 1.75 times the speed that the planet can regenerate them. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
Welcome to the program. This is Africa Link, and we are live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Assumpta Latos.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Remember to leave your comments live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Talking about comments, they're already coming through. Bashil T. Buhari says, I appreciate your evening program. Well, guess what? We appreciate you tuning in right now. Jack, Derek, you tuned in. Gaddafi, Mohammed is tuned in. Just keep those comments coming through on our Facebook page.
That's right. And now let's go to Nigeria for our first story. A Nigerian court on Monday adjourned a bail hearing for the leader of a banned Jihad Muslim group to August 5th. The followers of Islamic Movement of Nigerian leader Ibrahim Zakzaki are still demanding his release since he was arrested in 2015.
Yes, indeed. But that's not all they are demanding. The group has also rejected the proscription order by an Abuja Federal High Court to ban their activities after tagging it as a terrorist group. This comes after their protest in the capital Abuja last week claimed dozens of lives, including a top police officer and a journalist. From Kaduna, DW Zaharadeen Umar reports.
The Shiite Muslim group ban follows an ending protest for the release of their leader Ibrahim Zakzaki, which last week turned violent, resulting to loss of lives and property. Ibrahim Musa, the spokesperson of the group, is against the government's order because they are not terrorists.
All the people we interact with knew that we are not terrorists because we do not carry arms even during our processions. We don't carry arms. How can somebody who come to a procession with his wife and children carry arms? He simply brought his wife and children to show to the world that we are peaceful. We do not come out to fight.
The proscription order has directed that no person or groups of persons should associate with the Shiites because of their violent nature. The Nigerian government has clarified that it did not ban the Shiite religion sect, but rather the Islamic Movement of Nigeria. But Kaduna-based lawyer Barrister A.G. Bello explains the ambiguity.
The followership of IMN in Nigeria are the Shiite sect. So take or give, it turns out that it is still technically that Shiite and the activities that has been proscribed by the federal government. It's just that I don't know how they will be able to sustain the proscription. There is need for fair hearing. They ought to have been invited and the complaint against them be stated to them.
Some argue that the Nigerian government was right to make this decision to guarantee state security. But Major Bashir Shoaibu, retired, a security expert in Kaduna, believes it will affect the ongoing quest for peace.
They are Nigerians like us. It depends on how anybody reads the word, you know, the meaning of the word terrorism. I don't think they have already gone into that class yet, but maybe as the result of what has been happening in Abuja, and that's why they have been taxed so. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't believe it is going to solve the problem we're facing now.
Despite the ban, the Shiites have vowed to continue with its usual activities until their leader, Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, is released from detention. It remains to be seen how government will implement the ban order in a peaceful way.
Zaharadeen Umar with that report.
And now we do have comments from you, our listeners. I have one from Lord Bazoyu saying, instead of freeing their leader, you label them as terrorist. How can Buhari label a particular group, people, religious fraction and community as terrorists just like that?
Well, King Samuel adds, please, who can help ban this government for me? I don't think we have the answer to that.
No. Vincent Wamazembe, you're saying Nigerian terrorists have no agenda. They are fighting instead of discrediting Buhari's presidency. Why can't they mention what they want?
Mm-hmm. Well, Neba Jerome Ari wraps it up saying, DW Africa, the conflict between the Shiites and Sunnis is being fought in Africa. Saudi Arabia and Iran should leave Africa in peace. We have our African Islam, he adds.
And now let's go to another story, which is actually making lots of voices around the world. And this is the uprising between anti-government protesters and the police continued over the weekend in Hong Kong. Police fired tear gas and rubber bullets at protesters as barricades were mounted at different locations in the city.
Now, China reacted to the protest on Monday, saying it had seriously damaged the rule of law. Beijing spokesperson Yang Guan urged Hong Kong citizens to condemn what he called violent protesters.
As quite a few Hong Kong residents know little about the situation on the mainland and its legal and judicial systems, they may have doubts about the proposed amendments. So, some individuals and media organizations with ulterior motives have been scaremongering based on these doubts to stoke public panic and obstruct the adoption of the bill.
That was Beijing's spokesperson Yang Guan, and protests have been going on for a long time now, and it doesn't seem like there's an end in sight.
It doesn't seem to be, and it's a really big deal.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the major things or stories happening around the world. Let's come back to what's happening within Africa. It is said that money makes the world go round, but there may not be enough of it going round in Zimbabwe. The country is facing a huge economic crisis as President Mnangagwa prepares to mark 1 year in office.
The cost of living has shot up, with the country experiencing the worst power crisis in decades. Citizens are disappointed, although the government promises better economic conditions soon. From Harare, DW correspondent Privilege Mushanyeri filed this report.
It is evening rush hour at this Harare Central bus terminal. 28-year-old Hayden Sibanda, who works as a bus attendant, is calling passengers. He, like many other young people, was hopeful for better economic prospects when President Emmerson Mnangagwa was elected a year ago. But hope is fading away. He is struggling to feed his family as the cost of living keeps going up.
The change yakavepo, but tichitarisa economically.
Minimal change came, but economically, poverty is still increasing in Zimbabwe. There are some things that were rarely happening. Prices of goods and services are rising time and again. Fuel prices keep going up. Maybe the change shall come, but as it stands now, the cost of living keeps getting tight.
Zimbabwe is steering towards hyperinflation. Inflation is now up to 175%, with fears of a return to the conditions of 2008, when the country recorded the world's highest rate for the year. Economic analyst Prosper Chitambara say the absence of social cohesion has resulted in lack of consultation when implementing policies.
The government has been experimenting with a number of policy measures. It's like they are behaving like a drowning person who is clutching at straws. So most of the policies that have been implemented, they've been ad hoc, latching from one policy measure to another policy measure without really addressing some of the structural and policy impediments. The issue of dialogue, I think, in my view, becomes very important in view of the fact that Zimbabwe is a highly divided society.
Though there has been increased space for free expression and some freedoms, this has not translated to economic prosperity. Political analyst Alexander Rosero say success can only be achieved if domestic and international confidence is restored.
There is no meaningful investor or serious country that can believe in Mnangagwa, yet the citizens themselves, almost half of the populace, do not believe in him. I think what Mnangagwa desperately needs is national convergence, is national unity, and is reaching out to the opposition, precisely to Nelson Chamisa, who happened to be a critical political protagonist in this era.
The odds are high for Zimbabwe, with the World Bank predicting a -3% economic growth, the lowest in Southern Africa in the coming year. Mnangagwa's administration has asked for patience, maintaining that institutional reforms being implemented will bring results soon.
That was Privilege Mushanyeri with that report from Zimbabwe.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of Zimbabweans are complaining about the economic situation. On Facebook, we basically asked, when longtime ruler Robert Mugabe was forced out of office, many Zimbabweans had hope for a better future. What went wrong? Taplu knows the answer, but he says, cry, my beloved country.
And Bunda Standia saying, the situation might be bad, but not as bad as in 2008. Infrastructure is getting a facelift. Supermarkets are packed to the brim with goods, unlike in 2008.
And Emmanuel Hatilasha says, you know what went wrong? Western sanctions.
Okay. And Abdul Ahmed, you're saying he should come over to Nigeria and ask Buhari to educate him on how he took Nigeria out of recession in just 1.5 years.
That's I don't know.
Well,
is that a jibe?
Do you think he has to go to Nigeria? Oh, well,
I have no idea.
I have no idea either.
This is Africa Link. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Africa Link program broadcasting live from Bonn. I'm Assumpta Latus.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Here's what's coming up in the next 15 minutes. We'll be going to Malawi, where the HIV prevalence remains the highest worldwide, despite the progress made in recent years. Discrimination or stigma is the biggest problem.
Sometimes if we go to the community, you hear that I've been sent out of the house, or my marriage is over because I've been found HIV positive.
Stay tuned for that story and also sports news coming up from the African continent. But first, the AU Commissioner Moussa Faki Mahamat has urged all parties in the conflict in northwest and southwest Cameroon to engage in dialogue with a view to reach a political solution.
Now, Faki's statement came 1 month after Switzerland announced that it is ready to mediate the ongoing crisis in the country. Switzerland and the Center for Humanitarian Dialogue involved in the negotiation process say both parties must hold talks before the dialogue process begins. Mimi Mefo has more.
We have been trying to create dialogue among the parties because we have the acceptance of the parties. And we're doing it because we have a certain expertise.
The Swiss ambassador to Cameroon, Pietro Lazzeri, explaining how the Swiss-led mediation came about. Lazzeri believes the engagement of Switzerland is vital in seeking lasting solutions to the armed conflict in Cameroon's restive northwest and southwest regions. He confirmed the involvement of the country as he visited the Biya government in Yaoundé, but his optimistic assurances are not convincing enough to separatist leaders. Dr. Ebenezer Akwanga is chairman of Separatist Movement Southern Cameroon Defense Forces, SOCADEF.
The reality is the state of the Republic of Cameroon, we are not sure they were actually serious that they want to sit and talk with us. They were quite aware that there is a lot of internal wrangling between the non-state actors. Their original premise was to set a trap for the Ambazonian leader.
Failure by the Cameroonian government to voice its stance on the mediation process has been the bone of contention. In an exclusive interview with DW, Alexandre Lebeskin, Center for Humanitarian Dialogue's African Director, which is assisting the Swiss government in facilitating negotiations, says the Biya regime is ready to dialogue with the separatists.
The government has mandated Switzerland as a mediator and not as a negotiator. That is, as a neutral intermediary leading the negotiation between the parties. And the Center for Humanitarian Dialogue is assisting the parties and Switzerland in preparing and managing the mediation.
Lebeskin says the ideal is for the dialogue process to begin soon. But for this to happen, both actors must hold pre-talks.
They have to work on their negotiation strategy. They have to work on what they are willing to put on the table and what they are willing to discuss. And this will all be formalized in a first face-to-face meeting.
In order to have a pre-discussion, separatist leaders believe the Biya government needs more pressure. Ebenezer Akwanga maintains the dialogue is the way forward.
We need to put pressure on the state parties so that they can come to the table, talk with us, and let us solve this problem pacifically. To stop the bloodshed in our homeland, the killings in our land, the raising down of our villages. We Ambazonians know that the only way this problem will be solved will be on the negotiating table.
Efforts to get the government of Cameroon react to the Swiss-led mediation process couldn't bear fruit. It remains unclear when the pre-talks between the state and non-state actors would hold for the much-expected dialogue to begin.
That was my colleague Mimi Mefo with that report.
And we did ask you a question on Facebook today. Mm-hmm. Could this peace process lead to lasting peace in Anglophone areas? Elder Elvis, you're saying no, because we need justice and peace will come later.
Well, that was from him. Now, Ungu Nelson says, too much talking, no action. The world needs to tone down the rhetoric and act more. So many lives are lost daily. We need action now. I think that's something we all agree on.
Yeah, and Song Tae, you're saying, how can a small country, Switzerland, be stronger than a whole continent? This is a disgrace. DW, this is the news you should hide, please. Uh-huh. This is what, it's your opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And such comments are always welcome because we take that into consideration. Mm-hmm. Benedict Saf wraps it up, says, we hope so. So much has been lost and destroyed. It's time for peace.
Health check.
In Health Check, today we talk about HIV/AIDS. Malawi has one of the highest HIV prevalence in the world, despite the impressive progress the country has made in controlling its HIV epidemic in recent years. Young people and women are particularly at risk. Stigma remains a key barrier to progress, particularly among men who have sex with men and sex workers.
Now, the 10th International AIDS Conference, which ended last week in Mexico, reported that important progress is being made in developing treatment and prevention technologies against the virus. So what is Malawi doing wrong? Our correspondent Chimwemya Padatha reports.
This is one of Malawi's biggest referral facilities, Kamuzu Central Hospital. It is at this place where people living with HIV/AIDS collect free antiretroviral drugs. But many individuals living with the virus here are still being discriminated against. Some of the reasons fueling this behavior are cultural practices, such as myths and misinformation surrounding HIV and AIDS. Some Malawians feel that efforts to abate stigma and discrimination in remote areas where many people are less educated are not enough.
When it comes to leadership positions, it's very rare to see them holding positions. People have in mind that these people cannot contribute something tangible to the community.
Health rights activist Dingani Miti, however, told DW that Malawi has made strides to eradicate stigma and discrimination, but also fears that a lot of people are still not accepting HIV/AIDS as any other disease. According to Miti, government is not proactively playing its role to smoothen activities towards HIV/AIDS, including stigma and discrimination.
Many people still don't understand their rights. People don't understand that HIV is just a disease like any other, normal. Whether it's contact sexually or any other way, it's just like any other disease like malaria or any other thing. So we need to find maybe ways, new approaches on how we can tackle stigma and discrimination. But it still remains a big problem.
A national assessment of the impact of HIV on the population carried out by the Ministry of Health in 2015-2016 found HIV prevalence among adult women to be at 12.8% compared with 8.2% among adult men. A coalition of women living with HIV/AIDS is on record fighting barriers to progress, such as stigma, precisely among women. Edina Tembo is the executive director of the coalition. She shares her experience on how women are being shunned in a number of ways in Malawi due to their HIV zero status.
Especially when they come up in the open, they are like disregarded or not respected and called so many names. Sometimes if we go to the community, you hear that I've been sent out of the house, or my marriage is over because I've been found HIV positive. And sometimes it even leads to them stopping medication because they are afraid of being stigmatized.
At the 10th International AIDS Conference, new guidelines on HIV/AIDS programming have been rolled out in the best interest of countries hardest hit by the HIV epidemic. It is Malawi's sincere hope that governments remain committed to prevent further spread of the virus and give treatment to those living with an HIV-positive zero status.
That was Chimwemwe Padatha reporting from Malawi.
Now, Eddie, I really... I'm sympathizing with a lot of women who are actually are HIV AIDS positive and they cannot come out because... They feel
the
like they feel like there will be stigmas and also discriminated against. I mean, this is what I'm saying. It's like it's what's wrong? I mean, the awareness has been there for quite a long time.
Yeah, but you're very right, and the awareness should not stop. Education should not stop. It should be going on because indeed there is this great stigma. No one is really going to be excited telling someone that they have the AIDS virus or the they have HIV, I should say. But they also should be educated to know that there is the retroviral drugs. That the fact that you're HIV positive doesn't condemn you to death, and that you can actually live even longer better than a super healthy person. So this education should be drummed, and more drugs should be made available.
And I'm also thinking, is it because of sex taboo that we cannot talk about sex?
I'm pretty sure it's related. In most parts of Africa, talking about sex is not really, a comfortable thing to talk about. So again, that all has to do with education. Let people be more open about their sexual lives, and then, that will help erode the stigma associated.
Right.
Africa Link. Sport.
So Assumpta loves sports. I love sports. We know a lot of you tuned in love sports. So it's time for that. The 12th edition of Africa's version of the Olympics, popularly known as the All-African Games, will be taking place in Rabat and Casablanca, Morocco. It's from the 19th to 31st August 2019.
Now, Morocco was selected in July 2018 to replace Malabo, Equatorial Guinea, as the host of the 2019 edition. DW correspondent Samson O'Malley gives us details on how some countries are preparing and also other sport stories making the headlines on the continent.
The 2019 African Games are expected to host over 6,000 athletes from 54 African countries who will be competing in 26 different sports. Different countries on the continent are in the final leg of their preparation. In Nigeria, Blessing Okabare Itugunu, Olympic and World Championships medalist in the long jump and a world medalist in the 200 meters, has been left out of the Nigerian team. Though no reason was given, Blessing had become very critical of the attitude of sports administrators towards big competition in recent times, a possible reason for her exclusion.
It don't seem like we're planning towards the African Games yet. This is July, and we are actually used to doing everything last minute. It's what we do best. That's what we do best. And we're not getting better at actually improving anything when it comes to the sport in Nigeria. It's as if no preparation is being done. Most of the time, these people we put in place to actually be the administrators, they're not supposed to be there.
In Kenya, Shenzana Kuki Anwar, a defending gold medalist at the African Archery Championships in 2016 in Namibia, is confident of picking the top medal in Rabat.
Just fingers crossed and hoping for the best, that's all. As far as that goes, I'm willing to push my body as long as I can because archery is in my blood by now.
From Uganda, Shindaleni broke the 200 meters national record that has stood for 11 years after sprinting in 22.30 seconds during the national trials for the All-African Games this past weekend. Her motivation was based on her quest to improve her speed.
But I just come because I know if you do 200, sometimes you gain more speed. So it's just for the purpose of boosting my speed, so that's why I did it.
On the other hand, five Kenyan athletes, including Chibet Emily, Doreen Chimutai, among others, have qualified for the All-African Games in Morocco in the two-day national finals that were held at the Mandela National Stadium. In football news, the African Nations Championships Cameroon 2020 qualifiers got underway this past weekend with several matches across various venues on the continent. Bafana Bafana suffered a 3-2 defeat to Lesotho in Maseru on Sunday afternoon. Botswana were held to a 0-0 stalemate by Zambia. Burundi overcame South Sudan 2-0 in Bujumbura. In other results, it was Ethiopia, the original 2020 host, who edged past Djibouti 1-0 in Djibouti City. Retired Nigerian referee Saiki Alfred reflects on the weekend's result of matches played.
Shocking results over the weekend. I mean, everybody expected that South Africa, knowing their capability, but losing to Lesotho 3-2, that was a shocking result for us. And Benin Republic, they also held their home to a draw. So it shows you that Africa's overdependence on foreign professionals to get the job done for them is affecting African leagues.
Only national team players featuring in their respective countries' domestic league are eligible to compete. 16 teams will qualify to participate in the final tournament. Finally, former Liberian football chief and a current member of the executive of the Confederation of African Football, Musa Biliti, has been suspended by the World Football's governing body after being found guilty of corruption. He has been banned from the game for 10 years by FIFA Ethics Committee over what the Football World governing body describes as dishonestly using resources and accepting undue benefits.
Samson O'Malley.
That's all time will allow us. Hi, I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Assumpta Latus. Thank you very much for listening.
peaceful mind.